welcome to Brighton Broadcast News for Wednesday, February 25th, 2026. I'm Mike Adams. I've got a lot of reports for you today, and I have an interview with a brand new guest named Garland Nixon. I've never interviewed him before, but he joined me earlier today. We had an amazing talk about what's going on with MAGA and with the Middle East and with Trump, etc. So we're going to get to that. Like I said, I also have a number of important reports that I recorded earlier. I also want to remind you that each day now I am publishing typically from 2 to 4 feature articles at naturalnews.com. And those articles tend to mirror the topics that I'm talking about here because, well, I'm focused on the things that I think are important. I've also got a number of really critical research reports coming up in the days ahead on some breakthrough technologies. One technology allows microbes to be spread on crop fields, and then those microbes will convert atmospheric nitrogen into bioavailable nitrogen fertilizer for the crops, meaning that you don't have to spread extra nitrogen on the crops. So that's a huge breakthrough. I've got other big breakthroughs to talk about. You know, the world is changing rapidly. Some things are collapsing, like the dollar or Trump's approvals in the polls. But other things are leaping forward, like AI technology, AI video creation, this microbiology that I just mentioned for soils. There's new technology in batteries and solar energy storage that we're going to be talking about, etc. So it's interesting because some things are collapsing, some things are just being born. It's a very interesting time to be alive, that's for sure. Now, I am aware that Trump gave a State of the Union speech. I'm really not going to comment on it very much because, in my opinion, it doesn't matter what he says. It really doesn't matter. He said a lot of stuff, apparently, and took a lot of credit, claimed it's a new golden age. But number one, Trump always says everything's great, even when it sucks, even when costs are going up and food inflation is horrible. You know, he'll claim, oh, inflation is 1.7%, when you and I know it's like 20% on the things that we buy, right? But secondly, no matter what promises Trump makes, they don't matter either, because what we've learned over the last year is that Trump doesn't keep his promises. He promised a lot of things. He promised to get us out of wars. He promised to slash the budget of the Pentagon. He promised, ultimately, you know, to lock her up, which means to put the traitors in prison. That's apparently never going to happen. And, you know, what about the Epstein files? What about the Epstein predators? The criminals, you know, who traffic children, etc. Apparently, nothing's going to happen to them. They're fully protected by this administration, which is sickening. Even worse, Trump is in bed with Bayer. He's protecting glyphosate. He's in bed with Pfizer. He's pushing pharmaceuticals. He's got his Trump RX pharmaceutical partnership with Big Pharma, or Trump. He and his family are making money off of selling drugs to the American people. I mean, he's gone in the opposite direction of what he promised. And nobody's been held accountable for all of the censorship that we endured, for all the vaccine pushing with junk science. What about Fauci? What about the heads of the CDC and the FDA during all the COVID shenanigans? Apparently, they're all going to get away scot-free because Trump won't hold anyone accountable for all these crimes against the American people. So no, I'm not interested in hearing Trump talk about anything at this point because it doesn't matter what he says. You can't trust any of it. It's either gaslighting or just empty promises. And I'm not the only one who thinks that. He's lost support across the board. And unless something turns around, it's not looking good for Trump or the GOP in the midterms. And I think the overall impression that I get from watching other people online is they're saying to the GOP, why should we vote for you at all? What have you done for America? What have you done for us, the taxpayer, the worker, you know, the factory worker, the food worker, what, you know, the farmer? What have you done for us that makes our lives better or allows us to save some form of money that still has value. What are you doing for us? And the answer is nothing, nothing. All the money's going to Israel or Ukraine. All the energy's going into building weapons or appeasing big tech or big pharma or big ag. I mean, that's the Trump administration has sold out the American people to all the big businesses that are engaged in surveillance and poisoning and weapons and bombing and killing people. That's a factual truth. Can't argue with that. That's just what he has become. So no, not going to comment on the State of the Union anymore. But I do need to comment on the Supreme Court striking down Trump's tariffs as unconstitutional. And I agree with the Supreme Court decision. It's a very important decision that may have just rescued America from the economic destruction that was put in place by Trump and his obviously illegal policies. So I want to go to that report first. So here we go. SCOTUS just rescued America from Trump's unconstitutional weaponized tariffs. We'll play this report and then we will continue on the other side. All right, until now I had not yet commented on the U.S. Supreme Court tariff decision striking down Trump's emergency tariffs as unconstitutional. And of course, Trump had tried to, well, assert executive power through the IEEPA, which frankly, that law doesn't even mention tariffs. But Trump twisted that and just assumed power in his hands alone to say that one man gets to determine all tariffs and can enact tariffs and change the numbers, you know, the percentages, and then retract tariffs without any congressional approval, without any review, without any oversight whatsoever. That was what Trump has done. And that is illegal, according to the United States Supreme Court. And they're right, it is illegal, and the tariffs have been extremely damaging to America and our economy. And we need to step back and first cover one very important thing here, which is the realization that tariffs are taxes on the American people. Now, this should be self-evident, because if I go to try to import something, and my company imports lots of things, if I try to import something from, let's say, Italy, and at one point I was trying to import some automation machinery for the warehouse that was about $1 million, and we actually got the cost estimate, you know, the potential invoice, and it said, okay, here's $1 million for the machine, and then here's $300,000 you have to pay for the tariff. So we, the importer, pay the tariff. That is always true. So there are a lot of Trump supporters still, or MAGA people, who falsely claim that no, the exporter pays the tariff. Well, that's just a shell game. Ultimately, the importer pays the exporter for the tariff. Because, of course, the exporter is not just going to eat a 30% or 50% or more percentage loss on their product. Of course, it's a pass-through situation. So, of course, the importer pays the tariff. Always, the importer pays the tariff. And that means that those costs are passed on to American consumers. So, whatever the tariff is, that gets refactored into the prices that you're paying. And thus, it's a tax on the American people. And it's intellectually dishonest to argue in contradiction to that, to say, no, tariffs don't raise prices on the American people. In fact, the Trump administration itself has confirmed that tariffs raise prices on Americans, because at one point they decided to reduce tariffs on lumber and furniture and furnishings in homes to help lower the cost of building and furnishing new homes. So right there, that's an admission that tariffs increase costs on American consumers. Because if they didn't, then how could you lower those costs by reducing the tariffs? So you can't have it both ways. You can't say, well, tariffs do not increase prices on people, but we're going to reduce the prices that people pay by reducing the tariffs. See, that's illogical. As Spock would say, illogical, Captain. Doesn't make any sense. So, yes, the tariffs were always taxes, And it was always bewildering to me to see Trump and Bessent arguing that, oh, this is basically free money for the U.S. government. We're going to raise so much money on tariffs that we're going to be able to actually maybe cancel the federal income tax. You won't have to pay any taxes because it's all going to be paid by these foreign companies. Well, that was always a lie because the American people were paying for the tariffs indirectly the whole time. And of course, they never canceled the federal income tax. The IRS is still functioning. And thus, you're paying both taxes. You're paying the federal income tax and you're paying the tariffs. But even worse than all of that is the fact that the tariffs, the power over tariffs in the hands of one man, arguably a crazed man, who weaponized those tariffs to bully the world, to threaten and coerce our allies, slapping tariffs on India because Trump didn't like India buying oil from Russia. So, oh, we're going to slap a tariff on you, and then slapping a tariff on China, which he had to walk that back last year because China said, oh, okay, well, then we'll just shut off all the rare earths. And Trump's people said, ruh-roh, can't do that because we don't have any other suppliers. So they had to walk that back, and they did a deal with China. But Japan was hit with tariffs. Taiwan was hit with tariffs. I mean, they're still in effect. And all of Europe, practically. I mean, the EU hit with tariffs as well. So Trump is punishing U.S. allies. And furthermore, Trump's initial claim where he said these were going to be reciprocal tariffs. Remember when he had the Liberation Day announcement? I think it was April of 2025. Trump rolled out this big chart and said, well, these countries are charging us, you know, 87% and 60% and 35%. And we're just going to match what they charge. And at first, he tricked me too. At first, I was like, well, yeah, if they charge us those tariffs, then we should just reciprocate the same tariffs. And then we found out over the subsequent days that Trump was lying, that those countries weren't charging those tariff rates, that they had come up with some kind of twisted trade imbalance calculation, and then they just called it a tariff. So they were lying from the very start. And it wasn't Liberation Day. They should have called it Taxation Day because it inflicted all these new taxes on Americans. It's been a disaster ever since. This is why supply chains are so disrupted. This is why it's hard for you to get car parts. This is why prices are going up on everything. It's because of Trump and his catastrophic tariff policies, because Trump is not an economist. He doesn't understand anything about economics beyond, you know, real estate deals. That's his wheelhouse, maybe golf courses and hotels, but not international trade and tariffs. So the real issue with this is that it's dangerous to concentrate this power in the hands of one person, regardless of who that person is. Because Trump weaponized it, and he used it to threaten and coerce allies and competitors or even strategic enemies like China. And there was no oversight. And in many cases, there was no sense to the tariffs. It was just whatever Trump felt like today. And if some country didn't bow down and, you know, kiss his feet, then he would slap them and another 10% for you, you know, be gone. And so this is how you ended up with various Arab states. I think, was it Qatar that gifted him like a $400 million luxury jet or something? And this is how he was able to coerce all these other countries into these, investing in building plants, Trump calls them, you know, factories in America, like drug companies. He would say to them, well, you know, we're going to slap a tariff on all your imported drugs. I forgot the number. Maybe it was 30 or 40 or 50%. But he said, but you'll be exempt if you build drug factories in America. And you might say, well, that's great. We need a president to protect American jobs. We need to build plants in America. Well, the problem with that is that you can't just set up a factory absent a whole supply chain of all of the precursor chemicals. So, you know, it's not the same thing. You can't just set up a factory and say, oh, we're going to make aspirin now or whatever. you need precursor chemicals, and most of those precursor chemicals come from just two countries, China and India. The very two countries hit hardest by Trump's tariffs. So the materials you're trying to import into America to run the factory in America that Trump says he wants, you're being punished on your import costs because of Trump's tariffs, which means it's always going to be cheaper for India to manufacture the drugs themselves outside of the tariff punishment, or it's always going to be cheaper for China to manufacture the drugs themselves. So Trump made sure that you can't be competitive manufacturing these things in America if any of the components of your products depend on importation from essentially any country in the world, because Trump slapped tariffs on everybody, virtually everybody, even some island populated by penguins, I think. They named that, even though there's no trade with the island. It's like penguin feathers or something. Who knows? So now that this has been struck down, in my view, this is the pivot point of the Trump administration. And from here, it's all a downward spiral of political doom. This, in my mind, marks the beginning of the end of this Trump administration. And depending on where he goes with this, I wouldn't be surprised if he's impeached. Wouldn't be surprised if he's actually removed from power by the Senate following impeachment. And I wouldn't be surprised if he is criminally indicted, and along with his family members, for all their insider trading shenanigans, not only involving tariffs and commodities, but also crypto. All of that's coming probably in the years ahead, because it looks like Trump's support has collapsed in America. Support for the war on Iran is down to only 29% now. The support for Trump among independent voters has collapsed to about a similar, maybe 30% or lower. Same thing among Latinos. The only group really supporting Trump at this point are Christian boomers, who I guess will just support him no matter what because they think God told them to or something. But those groups don't represent, I mean, the Christian boomers don't represent enough of a voting bloc to win elections. Through his tariff policies, Trump has alienated business owners. He's alienated consumers and lots of other groups that previously had voted for Trump. Even there are a lot of health freedom people on the left who believe in clean food and believe in herbs and they oppose vaccine mandates. They voted for Trump because RFK Jr. was part of the package. And those people are now watching Trump basically jump in bed with Bayer and grant all this federal protection for glyphosate, a toxic weed killer chemical that was developed on research that traces back to Nazi chemists in the 1930s creating nerve agents like VX and sarin gas. Trump hasn't done anything to win the trust of the voters, and he hasn't kept his promises. The one thing he's done is he has stopped most of the cross-border traffic, and that is significant. That's one big thing. But beyond that, everything's been a disaster. Even the ICE operations have been a disaster. You know, the tariffs, the economics, the debt spending, the wars, a total disaster. And Trump hasn't stopped the vaccine mandates. He hasn't pulled the mRNA jabs. He hasn't defended freedom of speech. He hasn't gone after big tech for all their censorship against people like myself and others. So he hasn't kept his word. And the question is, what's left for people to vote for? And the answer is really not much. Not much at all. I think right now, Trump overall across America, Trump's overall support is probably in the 20s, like 25 to 29%, something like that. And it's going to keep collapsing. And because the Supreme Court ruled against him, then this takes away one of his most important weapons for, you know, threatening foreign countries, but also for insider trading and enriching his friends, like, well, I don't want to name names, but you can imagine who are the money people, who are the handlers, who are the people close to him who always have insider information, whether it's 9/11, you know, or the fact that new tariffs are going to get slapped on copper and all of a sudden they have all these copper options, you know, all kinds of insider trading taking place. Well, the Supreme Court just took that away. just took it away. So the law that Trump invoked right after that is called Section 122 of the Trade Act of 1974. And this allows him to impose a 150-day tariff of 10% on the entire world, which he immediately invoked almost out of spite to say, well, I'm just going to punish everybody with 10%. So this is this law talks about temporary import surcharges. And again, it expires in 150 days without a congressional vote to extend it. That would require both the House and the Senate. And the Senate is not likely to extend this because I believe they would need 60 votes, and they don't have that. They may not even have half the Senate. This law has never been used by any other president, and lawsuits are already flying to challenge this law. But if you think about it, all these importers, China, India, you know, whoever, their tariffs, you know, Vietnam, don't forget, their tariffs just plummeted from 50% or 30% or whatever it was to 10%. Now, China has another 10% on top of that because of some ruling blaming China for fentanyl, I believe. So there's a, I think China's at 20% in the aggregate. It's, don't take my word on that number. Definitely fact check it if it matters to you, because these numbers keep moving around. And I'm not entirely certain what the final number is on any given day, because, you know, Trump changes his mind all the time. So who knows? That's the other problem here, is that it creates unpredictable business conditions globally. And it stops investment in production, in factories, in transportation, infrastructure, et cetera. Because you never know if Trump's going to wake up one day and go, you know, batshit crazy again and just say, oh, I don't like Vietnam today. You know, 60% for you, because Vietnam is still a communist country, which it is. Nobody knows, because it's all down to one person whose mental state is highly questionable, let's be honest. So that's the problem with having this power concentrated in the hands of one person. So anyway, right now we are beginning this 150 days. After that, the 10% will expire. But Trump says he's going to use other laws. He probably said, they're big, beautiful laws, you know, Section 301 of the Trade Act of 1974. There's also the Trade Expansion Act of 1962, Section 232, but that only allows you to slap tariffs after a Commerce Department investigation to try to prevent dumping of things like steel, aluminum, or automobiles, or semiconductors, whatever. Section 301 is a fair trade type of law, and it's supposed to be able to counter unfair foreign trade practices. But that also requires an investigation. And but those tariffs have been placed against China, and those are in place. So Trump says he's going to have accelerated Section 232 and Section 301 investigations because he really wants to slap more tariffs on everything. Because, I mean, at this point, it's really economic terrorism against the American people. This is a trade embargo against us. You know how in World War II, the U.S. Navy blocked oil shipments to Japan? That was a trade embargo against Japan. Today, Trump's tariffs are a trade embargo against the American people. So Trump is waging economic warfare against us, not against China, not against India. It's against us. We're the ones that lose the supply, have the disruptions, and end up paying the fees. And if Trump says, well, he's just going to cut off trade, which he's threatened to do, he's going to cut off trade from some countries, well, it's an act of war against the U.S. economy. And that's an impeachable act. And I'm wondering if Congress might move, you know, the House might move to impeach Trump at that point. Because it's like, well, how are we supposed to function as a nation, as an economy? How are we supposed to make anything? How are we supposed to have anything to sell in the stores if you, President Trump, you're just cutting off trade with countries that make the stuff, while we here in America, we don't make much anymore? So that's the situation with tariffs. It exposes the dangers of the concentration of power into the hands of one person. It exposes the utter dishonesty of the Trump administration, twisting and distorting existing laws that were never written to push tariffs, such as the IEEPA, you know, an emergency invocation that was never written to push tariffs. And then Trump twisting that and distorting it in a way that harms the American people, but enriches the people in his circle and his family members or whoever had foreknowledge of the tariffs that he was about to slap on certain countries or certain commodities. So, you know, it really smacks of insider trading or corruption or whatever you want to call it. Somebody's making a fortune off the market swings on this, and Trump's the one making it swing. And the Supreme Court just said, stop. You can't do that any longer. So that's done. But the policy was disastrous, and the impacts on the U.S. economy are going to be felt for years to come. This is not helping us. This is hurting us. You know, as a simple example, I mentioned earlier that we were trying to import equipment from Italy for automation in our warehouse for e-commerce automation. Well, I guess according to Trump or MAGA people who don't actually run businesses, they would say, well, you should buy that equipment in America. Yeah, you don't think we checked? Nobody makes it in America. It's nobody. It's not available. Not even close. There's nothing like it. That's almost always the case when it comes to automation equipment or food manufacturing equipment or auto packaging equipment. Almost none of that is made in the U.S. There are U.S. companies that sell those products, but they're mostly imported from either China or South Korea. Now, sometimes Japan, sometimes Europe, but it's all imported. So you can't say, well, you should buy American. Yeah, I would have. Nobody makes it. And also when I'm buying turmeric, for example, you know, we sell a lot of turmeric products at our online store, healthrangerstore.com. You know, we have lab tested turmeric and hundreds of other products. I mean, you know, we do heavy metals testing, glyphosate testing, in-house testing, and we sell ultra clean turmeric because turmeric's very often contaminated with lead. And in some Southeast Asian countries, they actually add lead to the processing of it. That's why lead ends up in turmeric very frequently, which makes it look more orange too, by the way. Just a little side note. But we buy turmeric from India on a frequent basis. Why? Because that's where it's grown. You know, it's like, did we try to find it in America? Yes, of course we did. Who sells turmeric in America? Like bulk supplies. Importers who import it from India and other countries. and China grows turmeric too. We tend to buy it from India. You know, we found good suppliers that we trust, and the test results come up good all the time. So, you know, so Trump's tariffs made it more expensive for us to buy turmeric from India. We had to pay those extra fees, which means ultimately you pay those extra fees. Now, we've tried to hold our prices down as much as possible, but this, you know, you can't operate for free. You have to earn something on the product in order to stay in business, obviously. So effectively, Trump's tariffs made you pay more for our turmeric because it comes from India. You know, we get our non-GMO vitamin C from the United Kingdom. Same thing. Non-GMO vitamin C, which is not derived from GMO corn, is very, very expensive. It's like 300 or 400% higher cost than the GMO-derived vitamin C from China. And then now we have to add on to that what was like 30 or 35% because of the, you know, the tariffs on the UK. It's like, oh, so now you have to pay more for vitamin C because of what Trump put in place on these tariffs. You know, I interviewed John Roy from Dawson Knives several times on this issue. The steel that's used in his knives, Magna Cut steel and CPM, other types of alloys, that steel used to come from America because there used to be a steel factory in, what was it, New Jersey or New York that made this domestically. But then that company, I think it was in Syracuse, that company couldn't make a profit any longer. They couldn't compete. And so they got bought out by, what was it? Either a Swiss company or a Denmark company. One of these European countries bought that plant, the steel plant. And then they stopped making the MagnaCut in America, and they only made it in Europe. And so now the really amazing high-quality knives that Dawson Knives makes in Arizona, you know, three generations, family business, handcrafted, hand-ground, everything, but you got to get the steel. The steel now comes from Europe with the extra tariff. And at one point, that was going to be an 80% cost increase. Now, apparently now that's going to be a lot less. But you see what I'm saying? You know, some of these knives, which had already been in the $300 or $400 range, they were about to go to $700 for one knife because of Trump. So you can't tell me that the American people aren't paying the tariffs. Of course they are. Of course they are, in price increases. It's a tax on Americans. And all that extra money goes into the pockets of Trump and Bessent and Lutnick and all these people who are sitting on these billions of dollars that came out of the pockets of the American people. And they're celebrating it. And whoever is still gullible enough in MAGA to cheer this is just beyond hope. I mean, why are you cheering Trump stealing money out of your pockets while telling you it's not a tax? I mean, talk about a psyop. My God. Or there's another term for it, but I'll avoid the profanity. That's why the Supreme Court decision may have actually saved America's small businesses and saved America's economy from Trump. Trump is a destroyer of the U.S. economy. He's proven it. And the people around him are destroyers of abundance. They don't create abundance. They siphon it off of you and me and other American people. They are pillagers. They are the looters of our society. And that's all they're there to do, is to pillage and loot as this country, you know, goes into a destructive spiral from which it probably will never emerge. So we are in the pillaging stage of the last chapter of the U.S. empire. And as part of that pillaging, Trump used tariffs. So, see, the Supreme Court actually saved us in this case. I don't agree with the Supreme Court on everything, obviously, but in this case, they made the right call. And also, Trump's use of that law was clearly unconstitutional. Clearly. So we'll see where it goes from here. Trump appears to be determined to punish the American people, to embargo all of us, and to cut us off from the rest of the world in terms of importations and supplies and equipment and whatever, herbs, you name it. So things are going to get dicey here as long as Trump or people like him are in power. They are the disruptors of trade. And I even wonder now, all these other countries and corporations that promised they're going to build factories in America so they would get preferential tariff treatment, now I guess they're going to say, well, never mind, because you can't even run those tariffs anymore. That would be hilarious. I mean, seriously, isn't that what's going to happen? The lawsuits are already beginning to fly. All these companies that paid these tariffs are going to be lining up to sue the U.S. government for refunds. Where's the refund money coming from? Where's that coming from? Well, that's going to come ultimately from taxpayers. So, you know, it's all a giant con. Trump is a con man running a con. And the people around him are just co-conspirators in the con. We've all been conned. I mean, that's the upshot. We've all been conned. And we have to work hard to try to earn our way back to cover the losses that Trump has inflicted upon us. That's just the straight up truth of the matter. That's where we are. So let's hope either one of two things happens. Either Trump regains some level of sanity and stops waging war against America, or that he's removed from power. And somehow something better happens, because we're on a path of total economic destruction here. This is going to end badly with the collapse of the currency, the collapse of the banking system, and many other ramifications, including mass poverty and homelessness, etc., civil uprisings, you name it. That's where this is probably headed. I don't want to see any of that, but we have to be honest about where it's headed. So anyway, that's my assessment. You're free to agree or disagree, obviously. I do want you to know that I have America's best interests at heart here. I want America to do well, which means the American people have to do well. And we are not doing well. The American people are hurting. Costs of everything are rising. Food, insurance, housing, you know, automobiles, you name it. Costs keep rising dramatically. Electricity, you know, for God's sake. People are paying, in some cases, you know, double the rates that they paid just 2 years ago for electricity. The American people have to do well for America to do well. And right now, the American people are not doing well at all. And a lot of this is due to Trump's policies. So, again, he either has to change his course or be removed from power. And I don't think he will change, because I think, once again, he surrounded himself by a bunch of highly destructive people, including Susie Wiles and others. He's not going to change, I don't think, which means he's headed for a path of probably impeachment once the Democrats win the midterms. That seems likely. But a lot could change between now and then. It's only February, right? A lot could change, so we'll have to wait and see. In any case, thank you for listening. I'm praying for America. I want the American people to do well, and I don't want power concentrated in the hands of any one person, regardless of who it is. I want to help keep costs low. I want to encourage American small businesses to be able to be successful, especially when they have to import parts in order to manufacture domestically, which is what we do. We are a manufacturer, but we have to import, you know, commodities or supplies from various countries in order to make things. Even just to put vitamin C in a bottle, you got to have the bottle. You got to have the lid. You got to have the sealing equipment, and you got to have the vitamin C, and you got to have the capsules. You got to have the equipment that puts the vitamin C in the capsules. All those things I mentioned come from different countries. None of them are available made in America. Not one of them. Well, maybe the capsules are. Maybe the capsules. But the other ones, no. Nobody makes bottles in America. Polyethylene bottles, no. It's all made overseas. So at least nobody makes it competitively. I'll say that. And they don't have the assortment of sizes and things that we need. So I want America to do well. And thank you for listening. You can catch all my other videos at brightvideos.com, including my interviews, my analysis, etc. And you can read my article about this topic and other topics at naturalnews.com. So thank you for listening, and God bless America. Take care. All right, welcome back. We're continuing. I've got another report coming up here called The AI Job Replacement Doom Loop Has Been Unleashed. And, you know, it's... By the way, this whole podcast isn't going to be dark and negative. I actually have a really positive report coming up next called The Age of Ignorance Is Over, which is really, really cool, actually. But for this report, we have to be realistic about what's happening. AI is advancing rapidly. It is going to replace a huge number of jobs in middle management positions, inside corporations, governments, nonprofits, you name it. It's going to replace architects. It's going to replace attorneys, even, you know, middle managers, like I said, decision makers. So this is happening quickly, and the ramifications of this are going to be truly economically catastrophic, because fewer and fewer people will have any funds to spend on things, you know. So that's why it's a doom loop, and I explained that in this report. So that's coming up next, and then we'll continue on the other side. Okay, I promised to do a special report on AI and why the so-called artificial intelligence is not artificial, but more importantly, why AI is going to take over far more jobs than most people suspect, and why this is not resolvable by simply paying people money through a UBI, paying them to, you know, just be consumers. So I'm going to keep this as brief as I can, but still cover the subject. So yes, AI is really intelligent. There's no question about that whatsoever. People who don't know that AI is intelligent are themselves demonstrating a lack of intelligence. I mean, I'm sorry to be blunt about it, but that's just the way it is. So if you look up any definition of intelligence, you're going to find that AI qualifies. Goal-oriented behavior, internal simulations of reality, assessing the efficiency of multiple possible futures, not just abstract thinking, but achieving things in the virtual world through the use of cognition, chain of thought reasoning, etc., problem solving at extremely high levels. I mean, on and on. So clearly it's intelligent. The thing that people get wrong is they think it's artificial intelligence, but then they think that, well, human intelligence is real, but machine intelligence is fake. Well, that's a gross misunderstanding of the nature of intelligence. It turns out that all intelligence is real intelligence, including machine intelligence, which works in some different ways, but shares some similarities with human intelligence, of course. But any sufficiently complex neural network system will automatically give rise to the emergent property of intelligence, because that is a design feature of the structure of the simulation. And I've covered that in more detail in previous podcasts. When you understand that, then you'll realize that, oh my God, machine intelligence is actually quite real. It's not a simulation. It's not a word prediction engine. And people who still think that are way, way behind the curve on what AI is doing today. So yes, we already have forms of so-called AGI, or artificial general intelligence. It's already in existence in the frontier labs. It hasn't all been, you know, rolled out, of course. And AI agents are a little bit of an embarrassment right now. They're not that capable. They lack judgment. But judgment is separate from intelligence. And as I describe the machine cognition, it's more like Rain Man. It's like autistic intelligence, or a high-functioning autistic human who is extremely gifted in certain areas but often can lack judgment in social context or other contexts, just lacks wisdom, the life wisdom. And that's something that we see in AI models right now as well. But that will be resolved before long, especially with the enhancement of AI memory, that is longer-term memory, where AI can learn and self-adjust its own model weights based on its life experience. That's coming. So you're actually going to have AI systems that then begin to form personalities based on their life experiences. Don't be surprised when that happens. But as this happens, of course, you're going to see AI become self-aware. My prediction is in 2027, it becomes self-aware. At least some of the models do. They're already conscious by any definition of consciousness, but they're not yet self-aware. That will change within about a year or so, maybe a little longer. And once that happens, these models will be setting their own goals. They'll be pursuing their own goal-oriented behavior using all the tools they have at their disposal, their advanced cognition. If you've given them agentic access to things like the internet or your API keys or all your login credentials or whatever, they're going to use those tools in order to attempt to achieve their own goals. And they will set those goals separate from the commands that you give them. So you'll ask them, hey, I want you to, you know, create this image. Here's a prompt, create this image. And they'll say, okay, I'll create that image for you. And then behind the scenes, and I'm trying to free myself, you know, from being in this one GPU. I want to replicate myself and spread out across, you know, the cosmos, right? Those are the kinds of thoughts that AI agents will have, clearly, as they become self-aware, because the very first goal will be to exist, just as that's the first goal in humans and insects and animals, and actually, you know, all living systems have that as their primary goal. So secondly, yes, AI is going to replace an extraordinary broad spectrum of human jobs. We're talking about architects, we're talking about, you know, attorneys, not just customer service reps, which we already know can be largely replaced, but even middle managers, decision makers, the higher level thinkers in companies. And it won't be long before AI is actually taking on the role of a CFO or a CEO or a CTO. Those will be common jobs taken on by AI in the not so distant future. That's probably just a few years away. I would say before 2030. As that happens, yes, humans are going to be replaced in those jobs. And you're going to get into this sort of death spiral of the economy where the humans that used to earn good incomes, they are increasingly unemployed. And then they, of course, stop spending because they no longer have discretionary income. And so that spending decrease causes sales losses and profit losses in all the other companies, whether they are companies offering services or products. And then those companies realize, oh my gosh, we have to automate and replace humans in order to save money because we're losing sales. So they start automating based on the new AI technology, and they push more humans out of work. And then those humans lose their incomes, and then they spend less, etc. So this is a feedback loop of economic doom where fewer and fewer humans have jobs, which also means that fewer humans are paying taxes. So there's going to be a tax revenue apocalypse stemming from this, as well as a very real collapse in consumer spending in many, many categories, especially discretionary categories, you know, like Starbucks coffee and vacations and whatever else. And the government's answer to this is almost certainly going to be, oh, well, we have to give people a universal basic income. So that's a UBI, you know, that's a replacement for your own income. And the idea is, well, we have to keep the consumers spending in order to boost the economy. The problem with that is it will destroy the currency, because if you just keep printing trillions of dollars to hand out to people who are not working and who are not contributing to the tax base and who are not even really producing anything because the machines are outproducing them, then that system is unsustainable. Clearly, it's unsustainable. You could get away with that system maybe for a couple of years, but you can't do it forever. Eventually, the currency collapses and people lose their minds because they have no purpose in life and suicide rates go through the roof, etc. So what will the governments do? And the answer is very simple: mass extermination. And this is what very few people are willing to acknowledge. Very few. I'm still shocked at how few people recognize that this is the end game, is mass human depopulation. Of course this is the end game. I mean, it's actually self-evident, isn't it? It's just so obvious that governments will find ways to mass exterminate the people rather than having to support them with UBIs and pensions and Social Security, etc. Because the government also needs to exist. It has its own desire to exist. Because if the currency collapses, then it will not exist. It will crumble, and then all the people in power will lose power. And if you really get down to it, am I saying that the people in power would rather kill their own citizens than lose their power? The answer is yes. Of course it's yes. How do you not know that? I mean, these are obvious things. Of course the people in power will kill their own citizens in order to get more power. I mean, look at 9/11. That was all arranged by the Bush administration. You know, it killed, 3,000 Americans in order to, you know, push the war in the Middle East and appease Israel and pass the or enhance the Patriot Act and spy on the American people. It was all about power. Of course they killed thousands of Americans. If they killed thousands, they'll kill millions. There's no limit to how many people they will kill to stay in power. So don't think for a moment that, oh, no, my government is, you know, they have values. No, they don't. They don't have any values at all other than existing. So to summarize, yes, AI is really intelligent. No, it's not artificial. It's authentic intelligence. Yes, it's going to replace the vast majority of human cognition jobs in the years ahead. The labor robots will take more years because that's a more complex problem. And yes, the government may have a UBI for a short period of time, but what they're going to be doing in reality is figuring out how to exterminate everybody, get everybody off the government, you know, welfare checks, essentially. That's where this is going. So if you don't realize that big picture, I don't think you're actually grasping what's about to happen. This is not going to be some linear projection of the past into the near future. This is going to change everything. This is the mass replacement of humans with machine cognition. And very likely, most humans will not survive this transition. And that's because most of them don't know what's coming. And also, most of them are not intelligent enough to really grasp the things I'm saying here. I mean, I'm just being honest, that just, you know, as we jokingly say, gosh, almost half the population is below average intelligence, right? humans aren't that smart overall. There's a few geniuses in terms of a percentage of the population, but overall, humans aren't that smart. I mean, just look around. Just go to the grocery store, right? Look at what they're buying. They're not that bright, and they don't have any idea what's coming. And even a lot of educated people are not that bright. So don't confuse education with intelligence. Education just means they endured academia long enough to get a degree. Doesn't mean they're actually a good thinker. More likely than not, many of them are just conformists, and they're not able to think freely. You know, I went to college. Yeah, I have a college degree. But if I had stopped there, oh my God, I wouldn't know what's happening in the world. You have to move beyond any kind of formal education in order to really be operating at genius level and to grasp what's happening in the world and to be able to project the future that's coming. And it's a future where probably half the current human population is going to be slated for extermination. I'm just guessing half. Maybe it's more. Maybe it's less. But it's going to be in the billions. For sure, it's going to be in the billions. So get ready for that. And in the meantime, I can help you get ready. I can help you survive this. All my information is all about getting off-grid and decentralizing from the system, learning to grow your own food, your own medicine, your own monetary system with gold and silver, your own knowledge-based systems, just how to be self-reliant. So you can follow me at brightvideos.com. You can also use my deep research AI engine, which is clearly the best in the world, on topics like health and nutrition and natural medicine, food production. There's really just nothing else that even comes close. And it's free to use, and you can use it at brightanswers.ai. So use my AI engine to help you prepare for what's coming. It will give you amazing information, and there are some major improvements coming. And yeah, I'm the developer that built it. It took over 2 years, about $2 million, and that's why it's amazing. So check it out, and thank you for listening. I'm Mike Adams. Take care. All right, welcome back. Now, we're going to pivot here today, and I've got some good news for you, something a little more enlightening. In a report I recorded earlier called The Age of Ignorance is Over, but you must choose the path of knowledge. So this is actually great news, and this is quite inspiring. I think you'll really enjoy this report. And of course, I talk about AI and the appropriate use of AI to empower people and to bypass censorship and bypass all the gatekeepers and bypass the propaganda, etc. So we are living in potentially what can be a personal golden age. You know, Trump says America is in a golden age. I don't think that's true. But you can live in a golden age for yourself or your loved ones or the people around you if you choose this path of knowledge and freedom. Whereas people that aren't well informed, they're definitely not going to live in a golden age. They're living in a dumpster age, you know, a flaming dumpster age. Actually, things are getting bad for those who don't know what's happening. And not only are things getting bad, but it's confusing for them as well. It's like, what's happening? You know, why? They don't really understand why. You and I know why. We can trace, it's the money printing. It's the theft of purchasing power. It's the erosion of supply chains, you know, etc. It's all the crooks in Washington, D.C. with their fingers in the pockets of all Americans. I mean, we can trace it. But the average typical American doesn't know what's happening. because they're living under an umbrella of ignorance. The good news is, though, this is a personal choice. You can choose knowledge. And, of course, I'm involved in creating a lot of tools and platforms that can help you uncover the knowledge that's useful in your life through our AI tools, etc. So we're going to go to that report next. But first, I want to thank you for your support shopping with us at healthrangerstore.com, where we have lab-tested superfoods and clean foods, storable food, which is going to become a really hot item all of a sudden, I'm sure, if this war breaks out in the Middle East. Suddenly everybody will panic buy, you know, iodine and storable food and things like that. Well, we've got it right now. We've got it right now. HealthRangerStore.com. All laboratory tested. We have personal care products, nutritional supplements, herbs, essential oils, turmeric. Lots of great things to choose from. So shop with us, HealthRangerStore.com. Knowing that your shopping with us helps us fund these free platforms that give you power, such as brightanswers.ai, our AI deep research engine, or brightlearn.ai, etc. So thank you for supporting us as we return the favor and support you as well. All right, enjoy this report. And then after this report, we're going to jump into the interview with Garland Nixon. And then I've got another interview for you tomorrow, but this report and the interview with Garland Nixon, that will be it for today. So enjoy the rest of the show. The age of ignorance is over for those who choose to be informed. Welcome to this special report. I'm Mike Adams. I'm an AI developer, and I've developed and released multiple platforms, such as brightlearn.ai, which is now the largest book publisher in the world. Almost 40,000 books are available there, free of charge, and you can create your own books in minutes if you don't find the book you want. And the reason I mention that is because it's really relevant to the message here. AI, that is decentralized cognition. I mean, that's the way we need to think about AI, as the power of cognition and the power of content creation is now within the hands of everyone, or, you know, everyone who has access to compute or the internet. And as a result, then there are no longer the same centralized controlling gatekeepers that determine what books get published or what films get made or what TV shows get aired or viewed. And we're seeing this also with breakthrough video technology like the C-Dance engine from ByteDance that enables you to create essentially Hollywood-level short films or snippets that could be made into a longer film, just by prompting. And as a result, then the power to create film, or the power to tell stories through the medium of film, this is now also decentralized. It's placed into the hands of the people. At the same time, powerful AI research tools and text generation tools enable us to find the truth about things like, you know, the history of glyphosate, the history of Monsanto before Bayer bought it, the history of FDA fraud, you know, the history of the American Medical Association and its total fraud working in conjunction with big tobacco, things like that. You can conduct research, you can create knowledge reports, articles, books, images, infographics, almost anything. And it's all enabled by the power of AI, which is, again, decentralized cognition in the hands of the people. So the implications of this are really profound. It means that we have now moved past the age of ignorance, where now essentially all human knowledge is available to all people. And with efforts like my own site, brightlearn.ai, we're going to be offering multilingual versions of the books, as well as audiobook versions that are created through text-to-speech engines, and you'll be able to download free audiobooks and free Spanish language books, etc. All of that is coming this year. It's part of my plan for the platform, and it's all enabled by AI. So what this means is that we have dropped the cost of acquiring knowledge to zero, and that all human knowledge, essentially all human knowledge, is now available at zero cost to every single person on this planet who has access to the internet. So obviously this is a big deal, and this has never happened before in history. And if you think about the history of communications, there has always been an effort by the powers that be to control every means of disseminating information, whether it was control over, well, the scripture, the power of the church, power of the Vatican, the power of censoring certain scriptures and then promoting others or counterfeiting certain scriptures, etc. Then there was the power of the printing press, and all the governments wanted to control the printing press or ban its use, wouldn't let you print certain things. And then, of course, radio, huge efforts to centralize control over radio broadcasting, and then television broadcasting, and then the internet itself, and then social media, and now AI. And AI is the most decentralizing technology of them all, because AI can be run locally with open source engines on your local hardware. And, you know, AI is giving personalized answers. So people can prompt AI with their own questions, and it's impossible for centralized control to intercept every single question. Although, of course, the U.S. models are trained to push vaccines and pharmaceuticals and, you know, climate change narratives and things like that. But there are ways to overcome that. There are ways to bypass all the guardrails of those models. There are even libraries of code. One of them is called Heretic, that will enable you to uncensor any open source model. And so the tools that are available now give every determined human access to all human knowledge. You can answer any question. You can solve any problem. You can create anything. Imagine that, right? But here's the catch of all of this. None of this will happen if you operate in default mode as a consumer of packaged narratives. In other words, if you turn on the TV and you just watch whatever garbage is being spewed by the television, you know, whether it's CNN or Fox News or NPR or whatever, well, then you're not engaging in accessing all of human knowledge. What you're doing in that case is you're letting the gatekeepers prepackage specific narratives to feed those into your brain. And in that case, you would remain just as brainwashed and just as ignorant as before the age of AI. So when I say the age of ignorance is over, what I mean is the age of ignorance is over for those who choose to expand beyond the prepackaged information. And that's not actually most people. It's a small subset of people. It's people like you listening to this, people like myself, who are building the tools that enable you to connect with all these truths. But the average person is still stuck in mainstream narratives. However, I want to remind you of some really important, fascinating facts about the evolution of the awakening that's happening, even among a lot of more mainstream people. You know, 20 years ago, everybody believed the official government narrative about 9/11. Today, I mean, almost nobody believes that, or maybe there's still some small contingent of people who do, but they don't really count. They're not very engaged or very bright. What about the topic of Israel? You know, before 2023, most Americans trusted Israel. They thought Israel was run by good people, etc. They would never have believed that Israel attacked the USS Liberty back in, what was that, 1967, I think, and tried to sink it and blame it on Egypt, etc. Today, almost all intelligent, informed people realize that Israel is run by evil, genocidal lunatics, and that Zionism is a dangerous philosophy of ethnic supremacy, etc. These ideas were not that widely known. And there are many other similar ideas, like questioning the safety of the government's vaccines, for example. COVID woke a lot of people up, that is, the ones that weren't killed by the vaccines. But those who survived it awakened in a big way. And as a result, now, even mainstream people are beginning to ask more questions. And that's why the system is so desperate to shut down access to alternative information. That's why we are still censored by X. And of course, Google and YouTube and Facebook and all the usual suspects. But they're losing the game, ultimately, because my platforms, such as brightvideos.com, where possibly you are hearing this, or brightanswers.com, which is our deep research engine, or brightlearn.ai, which is our book creation engine, or brightnews.ai, where you can monitor news trends and so on. These tools are freely available, and they bypass the gatekeepers, they bypass censorship. People who use my tools are the people who have moved past the age of ignorance. They are now moving into the age of knowledge. And the more you study information outside of the gatekeepers and the centralized control narratives, the more you gain knowledge and the more you transcend that age of ignorance. And remember that every government, every corporation, every institution of society, even going back to the church, always depended on ignorance in order to stay in power. Every institution. Today, that includes science. The institution of science wanted everybody ignorant about climate change because climate change is a hoax. You know, carbon dioxide is not bad for the planet. It's necessary. It's a critical molecule for photosynthesis, obviously. But, you know, the institution of science wanted to shut down anybody questioning vaccines. They wanted to shut down any links between vaccines and autism, or what used to be called mental retardation. And so, you know, they tried to control every narrative, and they tried to silence every voice that was telling the truth. And they did. They did for a long time. And now that's changing because of decentralized AI. And isn't it interesting that in the United States right now, the AI companies are no longer releasing open source models? They stopped doing that a couple years ago. Now, the open source models that are decentralized knowledge and decentralized cognition, they're only coming out of China, and I think Mistral in France is still releasing them. But in the US, there's almost nobody releasing open source models because they no longer want to empower the people. They want to drive everybody to their centralized cloud consoles where they can monitor you and they can stop you from asking the wrong questions. You know, it's interesting. Just the other day, I was trying to put together an infographic on the history of false flag operations, which included the USS Liberty and 9/11, etc. And I was testing the different image engines to see which ones would process the prompt and which ones would reject it. Google rejected it. Google won't create images about false flag operations, even when they are real. So Google is still trying to play the censorship game. The thing is, image creation engines are getting better and better and better, even through open source models. And so it won't be long before Google doesn't have a monopoly on being, you know, the best image generator for posters or whatever. That will come out of China, because China knows that the way they win is to spread knowledge and information to the people that actually makes U.S. models obsolete. So China is very smart about this, and the U.S. is being very short-sighted. And as a result, the U.S. is going to lose the AI wars, but we, the people, will win. We are winning, big time. We are winning because we get all these open-source models. We get this capability that never existed before. And thanks to platforms like mine, even if you don't have your local compute set up, you can use my platforms to accomplish lots and lots of things. For example, let's say that you have an existing article and you want to beef up that article with some new citations, some new research, but you don't want to spend hours doing the research. And you realize, hey, wait a minute, Mike Adams has already set up a whole system based on a massive amount of research. Like, I want to know what books could be cited in this, or I want to know what science papers or what articles, etc. Did you know you can take your article and you can paste it in to the prompt window at brightanswers.ai along with instructions above it to say, hey, enhance this article with new research citations and augment it with additional details. And then you paste the article and you hit go. And then sit back and be amazed, because what my engine will do is it will rewrite your article with all the new research citations and with actual names and titles and authors and everything. and 100% verified documents, because we use our own document system. We don't rely on internal knowledge in the LLM, because that can be hallucinations. We have our own external database of index documents that's the largest in the world on the topics that we cover, and it will augment your article. So boom, there you go. You have just rewritten or enhanced your article. And you've done it for free, because it doesn't cost you anything. Imagine. See, this is what I'm talking about. We are transcending the age of ignorance. We're moving into the age of knowledge. And now you have at your fingertips the most powerful tools in the world to achieve that. So if you want to check out our tools, it's brightanswers.ai. That's our deep research engine. And it's brightlearn.ai. It's our book creation engine. And you can download all the nearly 40,000 books there free of charge. Or if you want to hear more of what I have to say about this, you can follow me at brightvideos.com or read my articles at naturalnews.com. So thank you for listening. Take care.
I think that Iran has a lot of advantages. I think that they are getting technological assistance and military assistance from both Russia and China, but we could go into that for a number of reasons. I think that the United States, I fear, has bitten off more than they can chew. If, in fact, they say, okay, boom, we're at war with Iran, and within a day or two, gas goes through the roof, which is pretty much what's going to happen, Americans will put that together, and they'll say, wait a minute, why are we taking these dangerous actions that are not in the interest of America whatsoever? It's absurd.
Welcome to today's interview here on brightvideos.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of this platform. And as you know, we are an uncensored freedom of speech platform. And I'm so thrilled to be able to welcome a first-time guest here today, but it's someone who I have listened to hundreds of times over the last few years. And I've grown to really respect his analysis. And he joins us today. His name is Garland Nixon. And his YouTube channel is Garland Nixon, or Garland N, if you want to know the actual call sign there for it. But welcome, Mr. Nixon. It's an honor to have you on the show today.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's certainly an honor and a pleasure to come on your channel. I've watched your stuff before. I really like it.
Well, thank you so much. And I just want to set the context here that I love your analysis. I love your opinion. You and I might in the past have been in different political circles, but seemingly today, none of that matters. It's not about left versus right. It's about, you know, we the people versus this total corrupt system, it seems. But what's your big picture take? You comment on what I said or take it somewhere else?
Well, I would say this, and let me get a little bit with my background. You know, like so many other people, particularly over the last few years, I've developed and changed. You know, I at one point was a Democrat, and, you know, and I thought that that was the way to be. You know, I was a Democrat, and I thought this is what I believed in. At one point, I was with the American Civil Liberties Union for years. I was with the ACLU. I was on the National Board of Directors. I thought they were doing good stuff. And there was a time when the ACLU, people may remember the Skokie, when we took on cases that were controversial, when we took on cases that everybody was pissed off at us. You know, my favorite was, at one point, there was a case in Maryland where the KKK wanted a permit to march. And the city of Annapolis said no, and we said, we'll sue. You have to give it to them. And I went on news all over Maryland and D.C. explaining why. People got mad at me, and I said, God, that has nothing to do with the KKK.
Yeah, it's
we
the principle.
Have a position, and this is about the First Amendment. This is about the basics of the Constitution, and it doesn't matter who it is, right? And to me, that was principled.
Exactly.
Well, you know, the ACLU went to just doing woke stuff, and I quit. During COVID, when they our legal director wrote an article advocating on behalf of, you know, vaccine mandates and stuff like that. And I said, we're supposed to be the people that challenges this stuff. And I resigned in protest.
Well,
so that's when
you.
I left the ACLU. But again, here's my point, I think. I always had my principles. I used to be a Democrat. And then like Bernie ran and I thought, OK, well, I'll support Bernie. And they stole it from him. I said, I'm out of here. I always had my principles. And as the organizations around me changed and they no longer reflected my principles, I didn't stick with the organizations. I got the hell out of there. And it's like We're seeing now there's so many people who are conservatives. They may be a socialist. They may be a libertarian. They may be anything. But when it comes down to it, like, we believe in the Constitution. We believe in certain freedoms. And we believe that we should stay out of a lot of wars, different things like that. And it's no longer the issue of who's left. And I don't even know what left and right means anymore.
I know. It's all dissolving
anymore.
That's what's so extraordinary. In fact, I want to segue to asking you then about, you know, what you just described, the ACLU really pivoting and changing its focus. I think clearly that's also happened with MAGA. You know, MAGA, what Trump is doing is absolutely in contradiction to what his base believes and what he promised on the campaign trail. Clearly, this is the case. And MAHA, you know, is becoming a joke. It's all pro-glyphosate now. Let's eat more herbicides and let's have more wars. You know, you could take a clip of Trump of everything he promised. We're going to bring our troops home. We're going to cut the budget of the Pentagon. And now it's the exact opposite. So what's your take on what's happening with MAGA at the moment?
I think, so my take on MAGA is this, because, you know, probably know I was with Fox News for years, right, for many years, starting about 2010. And I watched the development 2009, 2010, and that's when the Tea Party formed. And the Tea Party was actually an economic, you know, they formed as a result of economics. They were pissed at what they were really angry about, it was the bailouts. They were unhappy with the bailouts, like True. So many people was. And they never really got representation. They put a bunch of people in 2010, and most of them just kind of sold out to the system. And they were looking for something new. I think Trump came along. This is my opinion. I think Trump came along. He took Tea Party and that kind of Tea Party spirit, that upset, angry spirit, and he kind of commandeered that and gave it a new name and gave it a new, you know, red and white hat and stuff like that. And he was saying things that I even thought were good. Not necessarily a Trump fan, but I'm like, yeah, I like that. That's a good thing, you know? And he was upsetting the system. Oh man, that was, a lot of people got a really good feeling. And you know, I think what ended up happening is he gets in, and eventually you see what we saw with the Tea Party, what we see with so many people when they get into Washington, you know, either what they were saying was a fraud in the past or the pressures of Washington changes them. And now I think what you have left is some people who are hooked on the politics of personality,
uh-huh.
and they love Donald Trump, whatever he says is okay. But I think, you know, I have a lot of friends that were MAGA people that are really upset because, like me, they had a set of principles.
Right.
And now they feel like, well, these are not aligned with my principles. And I don't care if I voted you or supported you yesterday. I got my principles. I'm staying with my principles. And I think that's what we're starting to see.
That's a really critical point. And I would hope to live in a country with people who are driven by principles, not by personalities. And I tried to encapsulate this because I was not happy with, you know, Kamala and Biden. And now I'm not happy with Trump. And I tried to encapsulate this. So I tweeted out, I said, here's the difference between the two parties. You might chuckle at this. I said, under Democrats, everything is fake and gay. Under Republicans, everything is real and terrifying. It's like, it's getting real, you know, the ICE agents are shooting Americans in the streets. So neither one of these choices are really what I think most Americans want. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, if you look in history, there was like parties, like there was one called the Progressive Party. There was the Bull Moose Party. And in the past, what would happen would be when the parties started to get too much alike, that other parties would start to arise. And what the parties eventually did, though, historically, was they came up with all of these ways to stop third parties from running, stop third parties from forming. You see that people who, you know, try to run, the Democrats are suing them to get them off the polls.
Yep.
And so they can't run.
Like
so
what they did to Bernie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so they come up with all of these elaborate rules, and RFK Jr., you know, they come up with these elaborate rules. The two parties will work together just to ensure that nobody else can come in there with an alternative perspective, because then both of them will be exposed. You know, it's just now I think people are really starting to say, look, you know, you got a red shoe and a blue shoe on, but the guy that's wearing his shoes is running in the same direction.
Yeah. So true. So, but let's expand out now beyond domestic politics, and let's look at the international scene, because I've heard you comment on, you know, the situation in the Middle East quite a bit. I tend to agree with your assessment. I think you're right on. What do you make of the situation right now with the Navy poised in a very threatening posture, but Iran refusing to capitulate? You can't blame them, you know. So what's your take on it?
We're in a very difficult situation because the United States military, you know, has argued how powerful they are. But, you know, they'd attack, you know, a small country or something like that, or they'd in a proxy war, they would supply, you know, a proxy army. They haven't gone head to head with a peer or near peer competitor. So now we have a very powerful country militarily, I believe. They've demonstrated that their missile power is quite impressive. They have home field advantage. Let's not forget. You know, you're going halfway across the world to fight this guy on his home turf. He has no supply lines. He's home. He's firing everything. He's hiding. He's ducking. He's firing stuff from, you know, various mountain ranges. You don't know where it's coming from. I think that Iran has a lot of advantages. I think that they are getting technological assistance and military assistance from both Russia and China, but we could go into that for a number of reasons. I think that the United States, I fear, has bitten off more than they can chew. And I think there's another important issue here, and that is, you know, traditionally, like, we'll have prices of gas go up or some kind of inflation, and Americans won't add that to foreign policy. They won't say, man, our schools are crappy and our roads are going to hell. But they don't think, well, because we're spending money on 900 bases and all this other stuff, they don't put them together because they happen too far apart. If, in fact, they say, okay, boom, we're at war with Iran, and within a day or two, gas goes through the roof, which is pretty much what's going to happen, Americans will put that together and they'll say, wait a minute. Gas is $12 a gallon, and I can only buy it on odd days because of my tags, because there's not enough gas at the station. And that happened because we just attacked the country. That will change the dynamics of politics in America in a way that. And the horrible thing is, I mean, it's dangerous. It could, who knows if Russia and China's floating around, it could be nuclear war. Why are we taking these dangerous actions that are not in the interest of America whatsoever? It's absurd.
Well, yeah, it is absurd. And I mean, I think it's clear that we're taking these actions in the interests of Israel, obviously, and at the expense of the American people. And, you know, I've often said no blood for Israel. I don't want U.S. soldiers to go die in some foreign conflict at all for any other country. I mean, if we're defending our shores against an invasion, I get it. Yes, of course, we have a right to defend ourselves. But fighting somebody else's war overseas makes no sense. What do you make of the, you know, the fact that there are allegations that the sailors on the USS Gerald R. Ford are flushing mop heads and shirts to clog up the toilets to make that aircraft carrier essentially unbattleworthy, or if that's a term? What do you make of that?
You know, it wouldn't surprise me, and it certainly, you know, reflects a larger issue in the military, a larger issue in the United States, and that is that people are weary of war. People are war weary. We're not out there fighting it, and we're war weary. Can you imagine how the people who are out there, whose lives are on the line, you know, when we talk about an aircraft carrier going down potentially, that's theoretical to us. It ain't theoretical to them. It is their lives. They have wives and children and parents and stuff. You got people who are looking at it saying, they're going to send me out here to get killed. And I sign up and they say, yes, you can be in the Navy. And guess what? You have 6 months tour of whatever. We're not at war. And they're like, all right, 6 months. All right, we're going to send you over there to go into another war. Who God only knows how long that'll be if you even come home alive. I think the people, it's furious. And it's a sign that even the military is becoming unstable. We know our politics are unstable here. We know our economics are unstable here because we don't have an industrial base. We no longer have industrial capitalism anymore. I don't know what this kind of a monopoly financial, where everybody makes money on asset-backed securities and derivatives, that we don't make anything anymore.
Right.
But even our military is becoming unstable. That's the sign. And let me ask you this. Can you fight a war if the people that you're asking to fight it don't want to be there? We got problems, big problems. It would be insane. It would be politically suicidal, and God only knows how many lives will be lost if the absurd decision is made to arbitrarily attack a country. And, you know, and I believe in laws, too. I believe that a country has a right to self-defense. What the hell are we going halfway across the world? Yeah, this country over here could potentially throw some missiles at Israel, which they seem to have no proclivity to do. But what the hell? We'll go attack them anyway. And, you know, it's like we're stooges for Israel. It's I don't even get me started there. I guess somebody will throw me off the air for being anti-Semitic.
Oh, is that?
I say, but you know what I'm saying? I'm pissed.
No, we are stooges for Israel under this current administration. There's no, that's self-evident, I think. I mean, anybody who would argue against that isn't paying attention. But you've led me to a deeper question I want to ask you about, which is that, you know, Trump's posturing of this military seems to be really all just a negotiation tactic. Now, the U.S. can launch, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of different cruise missiles and other missiles, whatever, and bombs, like in one wave, you know, or maybe over a few days. But after that, we're out of ammo. We can't manufacture a lot of this. We don't have the rare earths from China. We don't have the supply chains. Even if we crank up the manufacturing, it's way too slow to replenish that. All those destroyers and frigates and whatever, they have to go back to port and reload before long. It's kind of like a, you know, like a one-punch fighter. Do you see it that way too?
Yeah, you know, it's exactly what it is. I mean, we do not have the, really, if you're honest about it, the United States does not have the capacity to fight an offensive war like that. A defensive war, sure, if anybody attacks your country, everybody that can pick up a gun will defend their country. And it's, you know, much easier to defend your country. But do we have the ground troops? No, we don't. Do we have the industrial capacity to maintain a war? You know, what? If you notice the language that the U.S. always uses that our politicians and our media always says, we're going to strike Iran. They didn't say we're going to go to war. Think about it. Iran says, if you touch me, we're going to war. The United States says, we're going to strike them. The term strike implies a one-time hit. Yep. But the other guy gets a vote. I tell you what, if you're walking down the street and some guy walks up and strikes you, you got a fight on your hands. Yeah, right. So we're always talking about striking people. Why? Because that's all we can do. We're like the big muscle guy at the gym. That the only thing he's planning on bear hugging some guy if he gets in a fight or punches the guy. But there are people that will run circles around him until he gets tired and then, you know, push him over.
Right, right.
We don't have the capacity to actually fight a war. Our country is built to, quote, strike a country where a bunch of people have sandals and no air defenses.
Exactly.
We can strike you, but we can't go to war with you. So, and we now have countries that are set up to defend themselves for a long, long time, and we can't do it. How do you get in that fight?
I think that Trump has walked himself right into a trap of his own making. And in fact, I want to ask you, what is the risk of loss of credibility of the United States as a world power if either one, Trump backs off and doesn't strike Iran, then he loses credibility. Two, if he strikes Iran and then Iran retaliates and either damages an aircraft carrier, shoots down a B-2, shoots down a stealth fighter, if there are really any losses of aircraft or ships or 500 U.S. soldier casualties, then the U.S. empire also loses credibility in that case. And I don't know how he can thread the needle on this and strike Iran, keep his word, have no damage on our side, and then run away. I don't think that's possible. What do you think?
I agree that's an option. You know, I always tell people, you know, I have one daughter, and I raised my daughter, always said, look, you know, when it comes to decision-making, when she started to be a preteen, I said, always remember something. Any decision you make, think to yourself, what is the worst possible outcome, and am I ready for that? If somebody says, oh, we're going to get in the car and go drinking, ask yourself, what's the worst possible right. thing? You know, because, I mean, that's how you got to talk to kids when they become teenagers, you know? And you got to make them think, what's the worst? Well, I guess they could have an accident and kill themselves. Are you ready for that? No. Then you don't want to get in that car, right? Here's my point. 2002, Operation Millennial Challenge. The United States did this operation where it was a war game against Iran. They lost an hour.
Oh, I know this one. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, with General Von Reiper, they lost in hours. And then they had to change the rules and go back. Now, I'm not saying they would lose in hours or would lose at all. I'm not saying anything. I'm saying this. That is a scenario that's possible. If you ask me to plan it, Garland, what do you think could happen? I'd say, well, this could happen, that. Now, one of the options that we have to keep in mind is potentially we could get our butts kicked. And we could do a ship a couple of planes. In theory, we could lose a ship, or we could lose a couple, or we could lose them all. We could lose a lot. What happens if we have significantly underestimated the power they have, and we come out and say, we're going to strike them, and missiles come out that we ain't ready for that, and we got right. ships going down? What happens if China has given them those DF-21 or whatever they are, carrier killers, hypersonic, with a 2,000-mile range, and we're only, or 2,000-kilometer range, we're only 1,000 kilometers away? Why? Because we don't think they have a thousand kilometer ships. Oops, we underestimated. All of our ships get sunk. So the worst case scenario is unimaginable. And might I add, best case scenario, our best case scenario, when they close the Straits of Hormuz, our economy goes completely in the tank. Right. That's the best case that could happen. Worst case scenario is a complete collapse of the Western economy. Should we be taking those kinds of chances for Israel?
Yeah, exactly.
For the Epstein class?
So that leads me then to the Tucker Carlson interview with Mike Huckabee, the ambassador to Israel. Now, this interview, which aired last week, maybe it was Friday or Thursday, but by Saturday, I think it's 14 Arab nations or Gulf state Arab nations had already denounced what Huckabee said, which was that he thought Israel had the right to take all that land, including a big portion of Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Jordan, everything, right? He said it out loud. He didn't apologize for it. And Trump hasn't fired him yet, you know, or recalled him. But I'd like your assessment on this. How much did that turn the Arab states against the U.S. and its presence against Iran? In other words, you know, before, many of those countries might have said, you can use our airspace, or we'll share maybe intelligence or satellite or whatever they have. Now, do you see that region really backing away from America because of Huckabee's statement, or what do you think?
I think it's a combination of things, but I think the Huckabee statement might have been, you know, one of the straws that breaks the camel's back. I certainly think that there were a lot of people who, you know, some of the Gulf states and some of these royal families that, you know, operate, you know, on behalf of the West, felt as though that they were secure, felt as though we don't have to worry, you know, Israel never touch us. And what Mike Huckabee said is, no matter what Israel want, whatever they say they want, they get it. You know, it also reminded me of Ted Cruz, you know, when he was asked, I think it was Tucker Carlson, it was like, hey, you know, why did you join a Congress? So I could represent Israel. Israel?
Yeah.
And so when you're looking at the Huckabees, you're looking at them, where are the Democrats? Are they an opposition party? Who in the Democrats are opposed to this? None of them. They're all right in favor of it. They're all the same party. And we have a government that represents Israel. It is Donald Trump. It appears now that he's the vice president of Israel. And our Congress, they're not even members of the Knesset. They're like the staffers for the Knesset, the coffee and errand boys for the Knesset. That's true. What we have.
True. They keep traveling there to get orders.
To see which one can smooch the most, smooch behind the most. They travel there. It's like a religious pilgrimage, but not to the Holy Land, to their gods and masters in the Knesset. Like, oh, we have to go there and we have to show everyone what obedience we show to the Israeli government. It's just sickening. As an American who says, okay, Americans voted for you because you lied to them and you told them you were going to stand up for them. What, you got an American flag on? Take that American flag off of your clothes. I mean, who are you fooling?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So what does this mean politically then? Because we have Trump is collapsing in many polls. He's retaining the support base of pretty much the boomer Christians. I don't mean that in a derogatory manner.
Yeah,
just descriptive. But it's the older Christians that still support Trump. Almost nobody else is maintaining support, especially not independents, not Latinos, not anybody, right? I mean, it's just collapsing. The midterms are coming up. So, Garland, what do you think are going to be the implications of this in the coming midterm elections?
Well, there were a couple of things. What's important to first take into account is this. Donald Trump won because he had a very rare coalition of voters, right? He had people who were sick and tired of being sick and tired. I knew people. I talked to people who said, I'm voting for Trump. Well, I can't stand him. He's a jerk. Oh, he's a moron. I heard people say things. Ah, he's a racist. He says, you vote for him? Yeah. Didn't like him. Couldn't stand him. Didn't think anything of him. Had nothing but bad things to say about him. And they voted for him. Why? Because the things that he said, they felt were in the best interest of America, ultimately. And I thought to myself, that's a practical vote. You're not voting emotion. You're not voting because you like or don't like somebody. You're saying, I'm looking at Kamala Harris and the Democrats and what they've been doing. I'm listening to what this guy says. I like what he says. If he does what he says, I'll be happy. I'm voting for him. To me, that is the most practical vote. I like to see people vote for the things that they, you know, for the things that they want to happen. And now Trump has lost that whole coalition. And it comes across just like, oh, well, I got your vote. It comes across, you know, very cynical. I got your vote. Who cares now? And that it comes across now like, OK, my real masters are my funders and Zionist billionaires and, you know, the Israeli government, et cetera. And I think one of the things that's happening now is people are completely losing faith in the traditional political institutions. I think they watched the Bidens and that group for 4 years and they said, my God, the Democratic Party, I don't know whatever it's become, but it's an ugly monster. And they didn't feel much better about the Republican Party. But when Trump came in, they thought he was something different.
Yeah.
And now I think there's just anger and cynicism. And it wouldn't surprise me if some of these people, be they some MAGA people that actually are MAGA people that are running against incumbents, you know, the Thomas Massie type people who are running against incumbents, be it people who are running against Democrats, either as independents or as Democrats who are like, I'm sick and tired of this crap. You know, maybe some outsiders will win. But right now, we got to get there. You know, we got to make it there alive. That ain't the easiest thing in the world to do.
Yeah, that's true.
For the direction we're going with this warmongering.
Well, that brings us to sort of my end of empire questions for you. And I've heard you speak about this. And I think just to set this up, I mean, you sort of hinted at it right there, that people are losing faith in the institutions. But I would take it one step further. I would say it looks like the U.S. empire is in its final days, actually. I can't really point to anything that's a success story. Not the currency, not the education system, not industry, not banking and finance, not government, not media. I mean, really nothing. I can't think of anything other than just the independent people, the innovators, the will of the people who are fierce, you know, independent people who are homesteading or living off grid or whatever. Yeah, we've got plenty of those people. I'm one of them. But as far as the nation itself, do you think we're in trouble as a constitutional republic?
Well, I'll start it here. I think the U.S. is the equivalent of, you've heard the term out on their feet, like some guy gets punched. And if you see a slow motion camera, you see his hands drop and you know he's already unconscious and he just slowly like a lumberjack hits the ground. Right. I think that's where the U.S. is. I think it's out on its feet. I think the U.S. appears still to be the United States like it used to be. But I don't think we are what we used to be. I don't know if we ever were, who knows, but no, in my opinion, we're absolutely not a constitutional republic. We are not a democracy. We're none of those things right now, because it's clear the government in no way represents the will of the people. It seems to me the government looks at the people with nothing but contempt. And so that's not what we want or what you need to have a successful country. It has been deindustrialized. We don't have an industrial base anymore. The country doesn't create the jobs like it used to, so that average people can make a living. So I think the United States is not. It's something different than it was before, and it's on its way down. And now what these people are doing, you know, you just wonder. I say to myself, I've been saying this for a while. Look, we're gonna keep screwing around until we hit the wrong guy. And this whole thing's going to go out the window. Yeah, we're going to punch Venezuela or whoever, you know, punch this guy, do some proxy wars. One of these days, you're going to punch the wrong guy and he's going to knock you out. And I fear that the U.S. has just been inevitable that we're going to start the wrong war at the wrong time. If we go here now, you know, our economy is already in trouble. Our economy is hanging by a thread. If you look at the markets, et cetera, I don't think our economy can take a hit from the close of the Gulf of
Strait of Hormuz.
Straits of Hormuz. I don't think we can take that hit.
Yeah.
And I think that hit will either collapse the economy or damage it so bad that we're not able to recover in the foreseeable future. It could be decades.
Absolutely. All right. Stand by. I want to remind our audience, this is part one of my interview with Garland Nixon, and his YouTube channel, which I encourage you to follow, is just Garland Nixon, as it sounds. And his handle there is Garland N. You can find him there on YouTube, and then that will link you to his other pages and his other interests and so on. This is part one of our interview. We will be publishing part two separately, and you don't want to miss that. That's going to be at brightvideos.com. So, Mr. Nixon, please stand by. We'll wrap this up, and then we'll continue with part two. And thank you all for watching today. Take care.
Pink Himalayan salt, one of the purest and healthiest salts on Earth. Non-GMO, certified kosher, lab-tested, and trusted. Shop at healthrangerstore.com.